Under relentless Israeli regime bombardments, many children have suffered horrific injuries. These range from deep wounds to their bodies to badly smashed limbs that have to be amputated. With few hospitals functioning in Gaza because the Zionist regime has bombed virtually all of them, there is desperate shortage of medicines and even electricity. The case of children with smashed limbs is extremely painful. There is no anesthesia in the few hospitals that are still functioning. Children's limbs have to be amputated without anesthesia. Some 1,000 children have had their limbs amputated without anesthesia in Gaza since October 7th, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has said. One can imagine the pain these children must have endured and continue to endure. They have suffered triple pain, loss of parents in Israeli regime bombings, personal injuries, some of which, especially to the limbs, are so severe that they have to be amputated. And finally, because of the Zionist regime's destruction of most hospitals and total siege of Gaza, amputations take place without anesthesia. The screams of children being held down while surgeons amputate their limbs is unbearable for most people. Naturally, young children cry for their parents under such circumstances, but they are already dead. Their relatives try to distract them. Take the case of 4-year-old Ahmad. His family home was bombed twice. He lost both his parents. He was badly injured and both his legs had to be amputated. He constantly cries for his mother and father. His uncle, who has now become his guardian, tries to distract him and make him forget about his parents. How could a 4-year-old child forget his parents? At this tender age, they are his entire world. Gaza's doctors continue their struggle in these most trying circumstances. Nurse Abu Ahmad Hossanein recalled how he stitched up the head wound of a little girl without anesthesia in Ash-Sharif Hospital as she screamed, "Mommy, Mommy!" He described this as one of the worst moments of his career. The case of a Gaza doctor is even more painful. He had to amputate his child's legs without anesthesia. After the amputation, the child died of pain as his father watched helplessly. The Zionist regime war criminals are directly responsible for these barbaric acts. They are amply supplied by the United States that has provided these savages with military weapons to continue the genocide of the civilian population of Gaza. The Ministry of Health in Gaza says that nearly 70% of casualties are children and women. The death toll has surpassed 21,000. The actual figure is much higher. Nearly 55,000 people have been injured, according to Health Ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Ghudra. There is also acute shortage of food, clean drinking water, and other essential commodities of life. Meanwhile, Middle East Eye wrote, more than 1,000 children in Gaza have had one or more limbs amputated since the Zionist regime's onslaught on the besieged area began on October 7th, with many undergoing the procedure without anesthesia, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, revealed recently. James Elder, a UNICEF spokesperson, reported that children in Gaza were enduring 10 weeks of hell and not one of them can escape. Elder, who has recently returned from the besieged enclave, reported that the few remaining hospitals in Gaza are overwhelmed with children and their parents, all of whom are bearing the ghastly wounds of war. He said that many of them were child amputees. As a parent of a critically sick child told me, our situation is pure misery. I don't know if we will make it through this, he said. Due to the total blockade imposed by the Zionist regime on the enclave and a dearth of anesthesia, electricity, and running water, health workers are forced to perform these surgeries in unhygienic conditions without painkillers. It's not as if there is a natural disaster preventing anesthesia from entering Gaza. Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, PCRF founder Steve Sosby said in an interview with Democracy Now!, he said, "It's absolutely unimaginable that this is happening in our modern world." He added that the number of child amputees was likely to grow because a lot of these kids have significant injuries that mean they will need amputations in the coming weeks and months. He said, not only were they amputated without anesthesia, but many of them were amputated in a very quick fashion. Around half of my operating list, which was around 10 to 12 cases every day, were children, said Dr. Ghassan Abu Sita, a London-based surgeon who traveled to Gaza to treat patients amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught, said in a press conference in November. He recalled, "One night at Al Ahli Hospital, I performed amputations on 6 children." In an interview with Middle East Eye, Sita said that having to perform these operations without anesthesia was one of the most difficult things I've had to do in my career. Prior to the current war on Gaza, 12% of Palestinian children aged 2 to 17 faced one or more functional difficulties, while 21% of households in Gaza include at least one member with physical or mental disabilities. According to PCRF, prior to the current hostilities, Gaza was already suffering from amputee crisis. The ongoing Israeli regime siege on the enclave, which tightly controls the flow of people, medical equipment, and pharmaceuticals in and out of the area, means timely evacuation of the wounded to better-equipped hospitals in the occupied West Bank is often impossible. The barriers to healthcare access are such that the UN defined individuals in need of medical referrals as a vulnerable group within the Palestinian population. According to PCRF, many Palestinians are at risk of osteomyelitis or bone infection following injury if medical treatment is delayed. The dearth of medical resources and restrictions on movement in the besieged strip means that many treatable injuries require amputation.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I'm Umay Biha Mukhtar, your host on IRIB English Radio. This is Muslim Lady. Joining us today is Sister Salma Khalfan, a respected Islamic researcher, and she will enlighten us on the concept of hijab as guided by the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, Sister Salma Khalfan.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So in the previous episode, we were talking about what Ayatollah Khamenei had to say about the situation of women and their hijab at the time of the Pahlavi rule. And we discussed a lot about it. It was very interesting. And towards the end, you mentioned it was very hard for women to preserve their hijab and dignity, especially in educational environments. Can you enlighten us more about this?
Yes, Ayatollah Khamenei has said that it was very difficult for a woman to also walk in the streets. Of Tehran and some other cities while she was wearing even partial hijab. It's sad, isn't it?
Very sad.
And it shows that women at that time also wanted that for themselves, the hijab. They were modest. They were a group of women who were going out in the study. Why in the streets of Tehran or other cities? It's because they were going out to pursue something, to work or to go towards learning or education or universities, whatever it was. But they were wearing partial hijab. That even it was difficult for them. Reza Shah, he had really strongly decided to go against this. This shows that it was just a stubborn kind of attitude that he had, just to show the Muslims that they were not right and to show the West that you are right and we are puppets at your hands. So this shows that women at that time also were pious and wanted modesty for themselves. And also it shows that they wanted to pursue their knowledge, their education. And that's why they were out in the streets, right?
Yeah.
And this shows also that Reza Shah was so stubborn. He wanted to, actually show the West that we are adopting your ideas. Like, it's a way of saying that, okay, you have some anwata atar, we are puppets at your hands. And that's not a very good thing, yeah? It's not a dignified thing for himself. In the long run, what dignity did it leave for him now? Look, he's no more.
There's
right?
just a handful of people who somehow...
Leave alone the rule of the Shah.
Yeah.
This policy itself, did it leave some dignified memories for him?
No.
Zillat.
Yeah.
Just, disgrace. That's it.
Definitely.
They had made it almost, Ayatollah Khamenei continues, they had made it almost impossible for women to also acquire knowledge in this country, that is Iran. You know, they were just trying to prove it to the women that either this or that. Okay? So if you want knowledge, everybody would like to acquire knowledge. There were also people at that time who would love to have become doctors and everything. So it was giving them a choice that was very hard to choose, you know, from what to take and what to leave. So, of course, there were some exceptions. But it was not possible for most women to enter scholarly areas unless they agreed to give up the hijab and the Islamic piety and dignity. It shows that Ayatollah Khamenei says, unless they give up their hijab and the Islamic piety, means the hijab is one of the criteria of piety for a woman and her dignity. So it's very important in this case, in now day and age also, if you go and see women, if they want to get a shield for themselves, that protection, that they should observe this hijab and start, refraining from this kind of copying the cultural ideas of the West and mimicking their ideas.
Definitely. I feel like it kind of gives you this feeling of self-respect as well. That, you know, I'm not defined by what I...
Oh, like a different,
show.
I'm different, I'm unique, right?
Yeah.
Ayatollah Khamenei wants that for us. In fact, Allah is, of course, all the commands of, is none other than according to the Quran and the Sunnah. So that's what he wants from us, that dignified look, that uniqueness of a woman, that woman appears like a shining star, because woman plays the central role in the life of a man also. You know, like, Om, they call her the source.
Yeah.
You know, that's so important. She's the source, actually. She brings up the society in the long run.
So we're just going to, pause briefly, and inshallah we'll resume in a moment. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we've been discussing about hijab at the time of the Pahlavi rule. And it's been very interesting, especially because we have been trying to understand that time and how hijab had a role to play and how it was kind of denied from the women. And if we reflect it to the times today, we realize that, you know, if this happens again, we're kind of denying that, you know, the right of hijab again, and we're going in towards immodesty. And we have seen how at that time the society got so corrupt. We don't want that to happen again, and I think that's the main reason why we're discussing this topic today.
Absolutely.
As well. And we're trying to understand that how, you know, the Western powers don't give infinite wisdom to us. They don't. It is Islam that gives us. It is Allah who gives us this. And we have scholars and our Ayatollah Khomeini and Khamenei who have been trying to emulate those concepts to us. And I think it's very necessary for us to, you know, keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
So what about the social progress of the Iranian women with the code of Islamic dressing? I'm sure our leader has loads to say on that, please.
Yes, absolutely, he does. Ayatollah Khamenei says that after the revolution, that is the Inqilab Islami, Islam and Imam Khomeini placed women as the center of political activities and gave the flag of the revolution to women. They encouraged women. Our women stepped into the area of, and at the same time, managed to preserve their hijab, their dignity, their chastity, their faith and piety. So hijab lets us do this, you know. Hijab helps us, you know, like preserve our dignity, chastity, faith and piety. Nobody, like, this is a very good statement. I love it when Ayatollah Khamenei says, nobody has done a greater favor to Iranian and Muslim women than this, you know, like giving this encouragement to come out and, you know, progress in the social field also with the chastity, with the hijab, with the modest dress and with faith and piety, of course, in the long run. As we saw during the revolution and as we can see now, says His Eminence, when Muslim women go back to their nature, they can make a great difference. You know, like as far as their nature is concerned, in the social area, they can really create an impact.
Definitely,
that's what,
yeah.
Ayatollah Khamenei wants to say. Thankfully, we have many knowledgeable women in various fields, diligent and gifted female students, highly educated women and prominent women doctors. In the Islamic Republic, various scientific fields are dominated by Iranian ladies. They preserve their morality, observe hijab, raise their children, because women in their fitrah, you know, want a family and they don't neglect their children.
Yeah.
So they raise their children in the Islamic manner, and whoever does, you know, according to the Islamic principles, will of course lay importance in raising their children and the Islamically that too, and take care of their husbands as well, preserve their family. And at the same time, they engage in what? Political and scientific activities.
Yeah.
So it is completely possible for a woman with an Islamic character to fully realize her potential in an Islamic environment.
We can see like how much it's flourishing.
Yeah, Islamic environment is completely a possible thing for a woman to flourish and keep away from corruption, luxury, lifestyles, modeling, humiliation, part-time display of beauty, these things, you know. So
kind of showing off and like you're reducing yourself to commodities where you have to, you're there to show your beauty.
And the sad thing is, you know what, the women know that they're commodities and they're very proud of it. That we are commodity that is best-selling commodity. They don't know that it's against their fitrah. They're doing the worst injustice to themselves.
Definitely.
Right? When they completely realize this, you know, and they accept it and they like it, that shows they've covered their fitrahs. And it's like sometimes it's sadly a point of no return. And that's why we see big actresses, you know, like in the West, dying and still beautifying themselves and not returning to the original fitrah, not realizing that, oh, what I did was just a waste. No, they're proud of themselves. And people who follow them are so proud of them, you know, that such and such actress was this. She looked like this in 1984 and 1985 she was like this. Until 2023 she looked like this. Look how old she looks. And she died after that. Okay,
so
now
successful.
Yeah, let's be silent and just remember her. That's it.
We also have those kind of women who, for example, there was one of them who was a singer apparently, and before she died She wrote that, I wish I had lived my life in another way. I wish I had got a family. I wish I had children. It's like then it gets too late and you feel like so resentful that you've wasted kind of your life.
Exactly.
The purpose you've come for, you're no longer...
Yeah, it's even very rare that a person like this would have realized.
Yeah.
It showed that she was starting to read or to get enlightenment somehow.
So, we're just going to take a short break and we'll continue shortly.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we're discussing with Sister Salma Khalfan about the social progress of the Iranian women with this code of Islamic dressing and what our leader has said about that. I wanted to ask, what is the message of a faithful Iranian woman to the world according to the words of our Islamic leader? And what should be the message?
Ayatollah Khamenei reiterates that from the social level of promotion of women and how they are reacting to it and how they want the whole world to know about the progress that they are making.
Yeah.
And that they should not lag behind too. It's like a tabligh, that they are doing. That don't forget this. So Ayatollah Khamenei says that Iranian women, especially those who have managed to make scholarly achievements in different fields within the framework of Islam, Islamic teachings and hijab, should convince women across the world that acquiring knowledge is not synonymous with immorality.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be accompanied with immorality.
Definitely.
You can acquire knowledge, but with chastity together. By performing it, of course, yeah? So when you come out in the platform wearing your hijab and proving that point, people will see that how can she do it, I cannot do. France will see, how can this woman become such a successful doctor or a surgeon and I'm here not allowed to wear my scarf and pursue knowledge? No, there has to be something wrong, right?
True.
How can they say that you can't do this and then because then you can't, be famous in education? If this woman could reach so much like atop that everybody comes to, pay her a visit regarding her field and take benefit from her. So why shouldn't I even adopt this policy of modesty, right?
Yeah.
So they have to convince all women that lack of commitment to moral standards in their relationship with men is not a prerequisite for acquiring knowledge. It's not like when you go and sit near a boy and have a co-educational school, that's when you'll become more clever. No, it has nothing to do. It's not a prerequisite for acquiring knowledge. It is possible to observe all these moral standards of Islam and achieve highly scholarly positions. There'll be so much more barakat too, right?
Yeah.
Because of, following that innate fitrat, innate nature of yourself, especially a woman. A Western woman changed her religion because of what? Hijab. Why hijab? It gave her freedom.
She understood
the truth. She understood. She appreciated.
And I think that if we look at the situation right now, what with all the sanctions and all the, money struggle that Iran is facing, yet it's progressing so much. It's really it's very amazing to me personally. I feel like, other countries say, but even though Iran is, going up, but it's not going maybe as high as it could be if really hijab is and all this and women, we are empowering women. But no, it is. But they are kind of limiting our hands. They're closing our hands because of all these limitations with the sanctions and everything. Otherwise, Iran could even go further. The people can also even go further. But because
that's
of all of these things that they themselves are limiting us, it's preventing.
And because of the faith of Ayatollah Khamenei, he knows there's a wisdom behind it.
Yeah, definitely.
So he should not stop working.
Yeah.
And women should not also stop working and feel this is the end of the time now. Now, there's nothing left in Iran. No, there's so much progress everywhere. You see tits and bits of progress going on.
True,
and
true.
It's not a small wonder, what with the faith.
Yeah, I really admire the people of Iran, honestly. And I feel like they're very special. And inshallah, we can also be as strong as they are in these times that they're facing.
Inshallah.
Thank you so much, Sister Salma Khalfan, for your valuable time. And we hope to see you in the next episode.
Inshallah.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here are some factors to contemplate upon regarding the all-glorious Creator, whom imagination cannot encompass. As described by Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who is one without partner. He who cannot be perceived with vision, neither be described with tongues, nor can imagination surround his state.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Shahid al-Quds.
Part 1.
The saddest day in Iran since Imam Khomeini, God's blessing upon his soul, passed away. Millions of people swarmed the streets of the Iranian capital, Tehran. They were filled with both rage and grief. Qasem Soleimani was assassinated. Not the leader or president or any other state official delivered a speech to the crowd that day. There was only one thing in the field, and that was the exact same thing that outshone all his medals of honor. Tehran, February 4th, 1998. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution took part in a ceremony to promote a number of the officers of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, the IRGC. One of those officers was Brigadier General Soleimani. The Brigadier General was born in 1957 in Kerman. He was assigned as commander of the Quds force that was responsible for supporting resistance movements in the world. Soleimani was at the helm of the forces for over two decades. Although he stepped out of darkness after major developments in the region in recent years, his covert efforts to support Palestine formed the biggest part of his life. For this reason, for Palestinian factions, Soleimani's name was synonymous with Iran. The founders and leaders of the groups who are wanted or behind the scenes have testified to this man's historical role. Many things have changed since then. On February 17th, 1979, only a few days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, Yasser Arafat traveled to Tehran at the head of a Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, delegation. 2 days later, the Islamic Revolution that had just achieved victory announced that the Zionist regime's embassy that had been established when the former Shah was in power would change into the Palestinian embassy. After a few months, Ayatollah Khomeini designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as World Quds Day. A few years later, after the emergence of Hezbollah in Lebanon, Palestine was placed at its heart. At the same time, Islamic and nationalist groups in Palestine, at the pinnacle of the First Intifada, which was named the Stone Intifada, reared their heads. Hamas and Islamic Jihad were on top of the factions. Soleimani stepped up its efforts. The Stone Intifada put Israel in a tight spot. Participants in the Madrid conference sought to put out the Intifada by making efforts for reconciliation. Iran voiced its opposition to the Madrid conference and, in reaction, held a large international conference to support the Intifada. The conference created an opportunity to boost ties between the resistance movements in Palestine and Lebanon. Imad Mughnieh was one of the participants in the conference. On December 17, 1992, the occupying Israeli regime's army arrested hundreds of members of the Islamic Jihad and Hamas in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and sent them into exile outside Palestine. Those who were exiled were sent to a camp in Marj el Zur, the western Bica in Lebanon. On September 13, 1993, the Oslo Accords sent the Palestine Liberation Organization out of the realm of resistance. Resistance factions rejected the Oslo Accords, and in order to confront that, they gathered in the format of a coalition whose existence was announced in Damascus. The gathering was known as the Meeting of the Ten Groups. The vocal opposition accompanied the official stance of Tehran and Damascus. Resistance groups chose the option of resistance. But the Zionist grudge did not stop. The massacre at the Ebrahimi Mosque in February of 1994 was a reminder of the previous massacres like Deir Yassin. The resistance movement retaliated against the move at the heart of the Zionist regime. While the resistance in southern Lebanon had already inflicted serious pain on the enemy, its support for Palestine was a counterbalance to all of the consequences of the Oslo Accords. On October 26, 1995, Mossad assassinated the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, Fatih Shaghaghi, in Malta. 3 weeks later, an engineer who was known as the mastermind of all operations by the Al-Qassam Brigades was assassinated. Yet, the operations by the resistance did not stop. In March of 1996, the U.S. supported Israel to hold an international conference in support of the regime, which drew widespread support by Arab leaders. The conference was following two goals: eradicating Hezbollah and bringing the Palestinian resistance down to its knees. The Lebanese resistance, namely Hezbollah, in the April 1996 conflict, resisted against Israel without any major challenges. After those events, Israel resorted to military options once again. In September of 1997, the Mossad failed in an assassination attempt that targeted Khaled Mashal, head of the Hamas Political Bureau in Jordan. Botched operation turned into a historical opportunity. A few days later, Sheikh Ahmad Yassin was released from an Israeli prison in a swap deal with two detained agents who were involved in the assassination attempt on Khaled Mashal. Several weeks after the developments, some news reached Palestine and Al-Quds from Tehran. Everything was about to change. Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani was designated as the Quds Force commander. Soleimani immediately held a meeting with the commanders of the resistance movements in Iran and Syria. Haj Qasem left Tehran for Damascus and held a meeting with the leaders of the Palestinian resistance groups. A few months later, the Islamic Republic of Iran held a historical meeting with Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of the Hamas movement. It was a historical meeting with the Iranian leader where they envisaged the plan for the future. The man who set the stage for the meeting behind the scenes was Qasem Soleimani. In 1999, there were rumors that Israel had plans to withdraw from Lebanon. As a consequence, in case of the Israeli withdrawal, the Palestinian issue was up for negotiations on the table for the Quds Force. Miles away, the aftershocks of the spiderweb speech was felt in Palestine. Everyone witnessed the first Arab victory against the Zionist regime. The speech turned into an outcry of anger in Palestine.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear brothers and sisters in faith and humanity, Salamun Alaikum. This is another episode of today's special, which you are listening to. We're going to speak about motherhood in Islam. Today, Thursday, is the 21st of Jamadi al-Thani, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Calendar, corresponding to the 14th of Day, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Retreat Calendar, and the 4th of January, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. This is verse 14 of chapter Luqman. Let's bless this moment.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. ووصينا الإنسان بوالديه حملته أمه وهنا على وهن وفصاله في عامين حملته أمه وهنا على وهن وفصاله في عامين أن اشكر لي ولوالديك إلي المصير.
And we have enjoined upon man care for his parents. His mother carried him, increasing her in weakness upon weakness, and his weaning is in 2 years. Be grateful to me and to your parents. To me is the final destination.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
In the verse under discussion, at first, the kindness to parents has been recommended. Then the Quran points to the course of mothers pregnancy in order to awaken the moral conscience of men and that he should not forsake the events of the past. He must always remember that his mother bore him and fed him with her own milk. She dispensed with her sleep and food for the sake of his tranquility in a manner that no one was ready to bear such troubles.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
As I told you, the topic of this episode is about motherhood in Islam. Every society is made up of blocks of family units. The stronger each block is, the stronger the structure of the family. Families are thus the building blocks upon which rests the fate of society. For the development of good families, the mother plays a vital role. Many women today have aspirations of progress in their careers and degrees in various fields. However, it is indisputable that the most important achievement of a mother is the raising of the sensible, virtuous child, virtuous children who will then move on to build other strong blocks for society. It has been said that it is easy to bear children, but it is difficult to raise them well. In that lies the challenge for all mothers.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. We shall be talking again the status and position of women. Lady Fatima Zahra is the most perfect and supreme lady of the world, who is known as an innocent daughter, wife and mother, as we said earlier. The personality dimensions of Lady Fatima Salamullah Aliha are not related to a specific period of time. And her lifestyle is a worthy example and model for all ages. She's not only an exemplary and unique model in housekeeping, husbandry and raising children, but also in other fields, and the manifestation of the Islamic lifestyle is crystallized in the biography of Siddiqatul Kubra, Lady Fatima Salamullah Aliha. What is important is that the basic pillar and cultural infrastructure in any society is the mother. And if there is a cultural inadequacy in the society, or high personalities and ideas are born, and the origin of all of them is the mother, no society will taste the taste of independence and dignity unless its women find dignity. Therefore, it is possible to consider Lady Fatima Salamullah Aliha as the mother of culture of the school of Ahlul Bayt and the Islamic revolution. And the teachings are like inspiration to all Muslim men and women who with their lives provide the ground for the emergence of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
In this part, the strength of a mother. This is today's special. Setting clear goals. A mother has to know what she expects from her children and then explain that to them. It is not enough to want good children. The children must know what exactly is expected from them and what the mother wants them to do. Sometimes a mother tells the child to lay the table properly because it has not been explained to the child what probably means he does not the way he thinks it right. The child may consequently be blamed for being sloppy or lazy, for not seeing the table right. The frustration and heartache could have been avoided if the child knew exactly what was expected from him rather than a vague order to lay the table. The same can be applied to all chores, behavior with others, academic achievements, and etc. The mother must have definite goals of what she wants and make them clear.
You're the reason my life's worth living. You're the reason I'm alive. I'd be lost without you. You're the reason that I strive. You're my destiny. You're my revenue. You're the reason that I breathe. You are all.
In this part, one tip for Muslim mother, and that is treating all our children equally. Often people are in the habit of treating children unequally, especially when it comes to gender. Boys are often prioritized over girls. They are provided with more resources as compared to girls, or sometimes intelligent or attractive child receives more attention. This biased attitude can develop a lot of inferiority complexes and other issues in our child. Islam prefers equality. Although men are given more authority in some cases, it is written nowhere to treat children unequally. Our beloved Prophet Muhammad loved his daughter too much.
One day, a man comes to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alih and he tells him, Ya Rasulullah, I want to go to jihad. I want to join the Muslims in jihad, in defending Islam and the Muslim community. Rasulullah tells him, he tells Rasulullah, but I am the only son of my parents. My parents don't have any other son. And he tells him, when I left my parents to say goodbye to them, my parents were crying. My mother was crying when I left the house because I'm going to jihad. She was crying when she was saying goodbye to me. Rasulullah tells him, leave the jihad and go back and serve your mother. Imagine how much reward you have to be a shaheed, to do jihad in the way of Allah. Rasulullah tells him, leave the jihad and go back and make your mother smile and laugh the same way you made her cry when you left her. And then he tells him, this is a greater act of jihad. He says, وَالَّذِي نَفْسِي بِيَدِهِ لَأُنْسُهُمَا بِكَ لَيْلَةً يَوْمًا وَلَيْلَةً خَيْرٌ مِّن جِهَادِ سَنَةً He says, by the one... Rasulullah, he does a qasam. He says, by the one whom my life is in his hands, meaning by God, if your parents are pleased with you for one day and night, layla, yawman wa layla, that is more rewarding for you than jihad for one full year. One full year of fighting in the way of Allah and the struggles of jihad. You keep your parents pleased with you for one day, that is much greater. My dear brothers and sisters, this is the akhlaq of Islam. This is what Islam teaches us. Two very important relationships. One is relationship with God. You have to have a healthy relationship with God. And second, with people around you. And beginning with your parents. Today, unfortunately, we see many, they disrespect their parents. Many, they treat their parents not in the right way, not in the way that they're supposed to. They leave their parents and they're not there for them to serve them. They show disrespect in the way that they speak to them. And this is haram. This is something that will bring the ghadab, the wrath of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala upon you. You have to take care of your family. And if someone has shortcomings with their family, then this person will see the punishment in this dunya and in the afterlife. Someone who does not have a healthy relationship with their parents, especially with your mother, this person will not see happiness, will not see tawfiq in this dunya.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special about Muslim mother. Inshallah, we continue to know more about this topic on the next episode of today's special. So follow us at parstoday.ir/en. Thank you very much and have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi. علي إمامي لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي
Our
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.